Ladies and gentlemen, let's continue our seminar. And as you do remember, we are also online. So that is why when we do have questions, please do request for the microphones. And now we will continue with our program. And I would like to invite Signora Beatriz Avalos-Bevan from Chile. And she is a researcher at a similar kind of institute that we have here in Finland, the Institute for Educational Research of Chile. You're welcome. Bem-vinda.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I am very happy to be here at this very old university, as I hear one of the first ones to have teacher education in Finland. I'm going to speak because I've been told that this is a meeting of dealing with education for all. Fortunately, I know a little bit about education for all because I'm on the board, the advisory board of the Global Monitoring Report. And I'm going to link what I'm going to talk about Chilean education and issues in Chilean education with the new sort of outlook that the Global Monitoring Report of 2013-14 have considered the major issues that many of the countries, not just the poor developing countries, but countries like us that we do not consider as ourselves as poor developing, but still developing, have. And that has to do with teaching and learning. So what I'm going to begin to do is quickly tell you a little bit about Chile and the educational system. That is the country. As you see, it's a long country. And we also have short days in winter and long days in summer if we are right at the end of the country, very close to the South Pole. But toward the north, we have the driest desert in the world. So it is a very diverse country. And I'm just going to say a word about how the system of education is organized. We have a preschool, about 3 to 4 years children can go from nursery to kindergarten, but it's not yet compulsory. We are hoping, this is one of the big aims of the current government, to make it compulsory. We have and you don't have compulsory preschool either, I understand, here in Finland. We have a basic school, which is shorter, it's closer to, primary and lower secondary, a basic school of 8 years, compulsory, a secondary school level of 4 years, and it has two strands, as you, the same kind of system that you have, humanistic or university-oriented strand, and a technical vocational one. And then, of course, we have tertiary education, tertiary institutions, and universities. So that's our system, probably quite similar to the system in Finland in terms of organization. Now, how does Chilean education look in the light of education for all targets? We have no problem in basic education. We have all our children are enrolled, and just over 90% completion rates in the correct time in the 8 years of primary school. In secondary education, we only instituted compulsory secondary education in the 90s. And although everybody needs to go to secondary education, the completion rates are lower, as you see. For example, over 20%, in the population that's aged 20 to 23 to 34 years old, only 20% have completed secondary education. And in the older population, it's even less. There is a low percentage of higher education completion. If we compare, I should say that Chile is part of the OECD countries. So I'm going to do some comparisons so that you can see how we stand in relation to OECD. Sorry, I put it in Spanish, but it was a mental change that I didn't make. But anyhow, higher education completion, our completion is lower than what it is in the average of OECD countries if we consider the 25 to 35 age group. But the main problem that Chile has, and I'm going to sort of center on that, is very, very big inequities in achievement, in how much our young people actually learn if we consider social class or social origin differences. And when we talk about social class or social origins, we're also talking about the type of school they attend. And I'm going to say a word about the kinds of schools that we have. We have three types of schools, and that's why those children appear there. And we have public schools, which are municipal schools. We have private subsidized schools. They are privately owned and managed, but they receive public monies, subsidy monies, for their education and for the payment of teachers. And then we have wholly private schools. Now, that child that is standing on the higher level is the child that achieves most. And that child will be in a private school, a wholly private school, and will, which forms about 9% of the Chilean student population. So it's a small group that goes to private schools, but they get the highest rate. I mean, they have the highest rates of achievement. And that means that those children that go to those schools are those that will later enter the university and that will later be part of the sort of leadership, let's put it this way, economic and political and whatever, of the country. So that is indicating inequity. The next level, which is not so clear with the third level, are the private subsidized schools and then the municipal schools. The municipal schools are shrinking in numbers because parents are taking their children out of the municipal school thinking that a private subsidized school is going to be better. And but the reason, there's also structural reasons for this, because the private subsidized school may charge some fees. So in fact, they get more money than what the municipal wholly public school gets. So these are huge. This has caused huge inequities in the education system. We now have a government, and I'm going to say a little bit more about that, is going to try and change this around. And that partly the reason that I am in Finland is that I came with a group of Chileans, parliamentarians and academics and policymakers that are want to know about Finland to see if we can learn so as that we can improve some of these problems that we have in our system. Now, if we compare with poor countries, with sub-Saharan countries, I'm going to just show this map. We are fine. But this is a slide done by the EFA, by Education for All. It's in the presentation of the GMR, of the Global Monitoring Report, and it's showing the difference. The yellow or the orangey dots indicate the poor, and the red or green dots, whatever color you see over there, indicate the rich. And you see that in every country there is a difference in achievement between the rich and the poor. Now, what happens to Chile? Chile is there. It's on the top end of the, you know, we're not right there where Chad is in Africa or Zambia, but there's still a difference between rich and poor, and it is greater than, for example, Uruguay or Costa Rica in Latin America. So that, even though if we compare ourselves with African countries or sub-Saharan African countries, or poor countries in Indian continent, subcontinent, we are in a better stage. But that doesn't say that that is a good thing for a country that isn't a poor country. It is a middle-income country. So this is our problem. So this is in terms of education for all. We also have a need to attend to what the situation is. Now, if we compare ourselves to countries that are similar, Like Finland, we participate in PISA. And these are countries that have a similar income to ours. Poland, sorry, it's in Spanish, but it means Poland. Czech Republic, Portugal, Greece, Chile. Right down there, in the average reading scores, the average scores for reading and mathematics in PISA, we are much lower than countries that have a similar income. We are a little bit higher, and so we think we're wonderful, because we're just a little bit higher than Mexico. But that's not a good thing. We are, in fact, we should be achieving much more than what we actually do achieve. Now, I'm just going to talk about some quality indicators. If we compare again with OECD countries, we're in the OECD, we have class sizes of 31.5 children compared to 21.3, the OECD average. I've seen here in Finland, your classes are around 20 or 21, and it's wonderful. We saw beautiful teaching yesterday in a school, and 20 kids in the class. Many of our teachers have 45 children in their class, and so it's very difficult for them to achieve the quality teaching or learning that you can do in a smaller class. So that's one problem or one reason why we don't have the achievement rates that we would like. The pupil-teacher ratio average is about 25 in primary and secondary. It's the same compared to 16 in primary school and 13 in secondary OECD average. So again, our pupil-teacher ratio is higher. In other words, the teacher has to attend to more students than what is the case in other countries that are that we would like to compare with. Our starting, the salaries of teachers who begin to teach in Chile are about half of the average in the OECD. And the instructional time, the hours per year that teachers teach in Chile is also much higher than the OECD, as you can see through the numbers there in the OECD countries. So all these indicators that are indicators of quality, what makes for quality, as you well know here, is good teaching and good teacher preparation. But when you have teaching conditions that don't go together with teacher preparation, it hinders, it makes it more difficult to achieve results. So what are our challenges in the light of the Global Monitoring Report? The Global Monitoring Report for this year, as I said, is focused on teaching and learning. And what they say in one of the important slides is that policymakers have to do something about this. When we see Chile with these indicators, it is important that policymakers understand that teaching and teachers are crucial to the quality of a system. It isn't just having good, nice buildings. We have okay, our school buildings are okay. They don't compare to very, very poor school buildings that you might find in sub-Saharan Africa or in India or poor countries in Latin America. But it's not enough. It's not enough that all our children have textbooks. It's not enough that all our children have teachers if those teachers have such a big load that it makes it difficult for them to work. So policymakers have to do something. So what do they have to do? What does the GMR say? The first thing they're saying is you need to get good candidates for teaching. I know that Finland is an example to the world because teaching is important and prestigious, and you get very, very good applicants for teaching. We don't. Because teaching is low paid, it's hard work, most young students finishing high school or secondary school, if they have very good marks in their final or university entrance examinations, will say, no, I'm going to go to engineering, I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to do anything where I can get more money or better working conditions. And so we're not getting the best recruits into teaching. We have to do that. Our teachers, therefore, because they enter at the lower cutting point of university entrance exams, they tend to come from lower middle class And I've already told you that lower middle class and poorer students go to poorer schools and get a less quality education there. So they don't come with the basic preparation that is needed to teach well. We are not sure, although I have some doubts. I think that they are actually our student teachers, and I've been studying them. Many of them are committed to teaching. They would like to be good teachers. But they need more tools, in a sense, to be able to do this well. And recent policy, so the government now is aiming to change things so that this will improve. But I also want to tell you about... I'm not part of the government, but I am part of a huge civil society movement. And we have decided to fight for teachers. And so we've got a huge group that represents 20 different kinds of institutions, but also we work with teachers in schools, and we did a big national campaign using the media to call for big changes in teacher education. I think they're going to be in line, what we're saying, with what government wants to do. We don't know yet, because we don't know the full extent of the policies. But I'll tell you something about it. So how should Chile aim to address the EFIT? We would want teachers to have good subject knowledge. So that is what the Global Monitoring Report from EFA says. If we're going to have good teachers, they have to know what they're going to teach. It also tells us that they must be equipped to meet the needs of the disadvantaged groups. In Chile, the disadvantaged groups get teachers that are less prepared because the conditions of work in many of those groups and many of those schools are not adequate. We need training in the use of assessment. This is all the recommendations of the Global Monitoring Report, or EFA. I'm just saying that even though they are recommendations for the poorer countries, they're totally valid for Chile. Teachers need training in the use of assessment tools to direct and address learning difficulties early. Teacher trainees should have classroom experience, and new teachers support from mentors. Especially in countries where there's a great heterogeneity in classrooms, a lot of differences. And training must not stop once teachers are in classroom. In other words, we need continuous professional teacher development. So let's look at these things. Teacher educators also, yes. Now, there may be a conflict when you say attract the best teachers into the best recruits into teaching, the top school leavers into teaching. In Chile at least, there may not be enough of those candidates to have teachers willing to go to the very remote areas. I showed you the remote south and the remote north. So we may have to balance the looking for the best with looking for also some that are not as good but are committed and could be improved and could be brought up to standard, so that we can attract from those regions teachers willing to teach the more disadvantaged groups. So one of the ways the government does it and should continue to do it is providing extra incentives also, some monitoring or better housing or whatever conditions for teachers to work in the remote areas. But also it's important to recruit locally, and that's why I know that in the north, in the very north of Chile and in the south, the two universities there are not able to recruit the best candidates. They're not that many, and they are choosing other things. So we have to find ways of addressing that. The GMR says teachers in some poor countries are not paid enough to live on. Well, in Chile, that is not a poor country. They're still not paid enough to live on. How would I say? They can live, basically, but they can't. They're having to find two jobs. They're having to work very hard, so the salary is insufficient, clearly insufficient. Teachers' starting salaries compared to other professionals in Chile, to other professionals that have also entered with the best qualifications that are in engineering and law and whatever, are fifth, and that study 4 to 5 years, which is the length of our teacher education, earn about 50% less. Well, that's just a list that's not... Many West African countries have teachers who are contracted for short-term contracts. That's the same in Chile. I think our government may not like it if I'm saying it too loud, but it is true. In many schools, especially young teachers, when they finish teaching, they tend to be contracted for 1 year, especially in the private subsidized schools, because they contract them for 1 year and then they dismiss them and then they get another young teacher and contract them for 1 year and then another, because it's cheaper. You don't have to pay, you know, pension funds and things like that, that you do have to do when you contract a full-time teacher. So in Chile, that needs to change. Sorry, don't worry about that. Now, these are the problems. Are we going to do anything about them? Yes, I already said that there is a big civil society movement, and we call it the Teacher's Plan, that has already produced a document, and we formally gave it to the Minister of Education about a week ago, and we told them, listen, Minister, you better pay attention to what the country is saying. But the government is also concerned, and they are also producing some changes. The big amongst the changes, there are several changes, and I'll say a word, but the big thing is this plan, and that's what I was telling you before. This is our first movement. But one thing is, this is what the GMR says, the Global Monitoring Report. Provide incentives to attract. So how is Chile going to do that? The one thing they need to do is raise the basic entry salary of teachers. So the government is considering it. We, in our national teachers plan, this big thing that I told you about, we also have a figure, a number, in terms of money that should be paid when teachers begin to teach. And they should be offered the best working conditions. They also need a career path. And so we are proposing, the civil society movement, and the government is also going to come up, we don't know how it's going to look, at the, they're working at it, a teacher's career path. So that means that when I enter teaching, I have these conditions, I'm paid this, I have mentoring and support. When I'm about 5 to 10 years of experience, I should be able to move to another level. And so you may have 3 or 4 levels in a career path, so that you end, when you finish, when you're ready to retire, you retire with a decent wage. We also need to retain good teachers, because good teachers may enter the system, but if it's very hard working conditions and they get better opportunities, they'll leave. And so we need to pay them. That's why the career path is important, so that they know that if they continue to work well, they're going to be able to maybe be evaluated for their performance and get a decent, better conditions, working conditions. Teacher preparation. Structurally, we have a good system of teacher preparation. All our teachers are prepared in universities. Most of the teaching programs are about 4 to 5 years. We learn the same things that you learn here, some elements of foundations, education, sociology, psychology, some practical things like methods of instruction and evaluation, and we also have practicum. But the quality of what goes on in the teacher education, what the teacher educators are able to do or what they actually do, is not good. We have learned here in Finland, you have a strong research component of teacher education. Although we do have our student teachers do projects, research projects, and they learn research methods, the whole teacher education isn't sufficiently embedded with research results from projects. Better hurry, because I have to... we need to also monitor the quality of teacher education through adequate qualifications, sorry, accreditation of the institutions. And very important, I know you do not have it officially, but we do need it, mentoring, help for the beginning teacher. And collaborative professional development in schools. This is the reform, that's all in Spanish, but it has three sections. This is what the government is proposing. It's going to try and change the structure of the schools so that we don't have these tremendous differences between the rich, the schools that the rich go to and the schools that the others. So that means a new administration. We're not happy with the municipal administration because it hasn't worked well. And a teacher policy, the three elements of the reform. And that's what I need to say. I have time. I don't have much more time to say, but maybe there might be one or two questions that you want to ask about this. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes.
Well, thanks for the presentation. I've got a question. And the question is why the rate of people, the number of people who are able to complete the secondary school level are so low, and what are the reasons, and how the situation, how this issue is going to be addressed?
Well, the reason why we get that low achievement in the PISA studies, for example, and the PISA, it's because of the quality of teaching in the schools. But the quality of teaching in the schools, as I tried to explain, is linked also to socioeconomic conditions. If children come from we still have many homes in Chile where the cultural basis of the family is relatively low. If the school doesn't bring the quality of the children's basic learning or should I say supplement what the parents are able to do at home, then of course the learning results are lower. But I think the other reason has to do with the teachers' working conditions. When teachers have to teach 45 kids in the school, when they are many hours in the school, and they have to go home and plan, because they have to stay in the school the whole school day, the ones that have, then they have little time to address students' difficulties in learning, or they don't give them sufficient assessments to know where they stand. So it's a combination of factors. It has to do with quality in the schools themselves, but also segregation of schools, of the schools for the very rich, the schools for the middle class, and the much poorer schools that are public, wholly public as the municipals. This is why the government has now a project of law, to change that structure, to give equal conditions to all those students, and there are about 90% that are in publicly funded schools, equal conditions in terms of teacher qualifications and in terms of teacher conditions, and also demand more a better quality. But it's a set of reasons. It's not just one. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. This is so interesting, and I have been now following your minister's delegation and seeing what all kind of things you have seen, and it's a very overall view probably that you have been now having. But from our side, it's very interesting to see the movement in Chile. So that I'm asking now, that is there a true consensus of the need of this change?
Yeah.
So that it won't then change again with the next government.
Yes.
Because that's many times the challenge, that what happens then. Because I have seen now that there is a huge amount of discussion of the need, but then the kind of aims and all the ways of making the change.
Well, you're absolutely right about, we have governments that last 4 years and they change. President can't be re-elected for another 4 years immediately after. So there is that danger. Now, I'd say that right now there is a general consensus, one, that the quality of education is inadequate, two, that teaching and teacher conditions of work are inadequate and they need to be addressed. There isn't consensus about certain things, like stopping selection in schools. That's one factor that makes, for example, for those three kinds, so you remember the kids that we had, the little one that gets the last and the other one and the other one? All right. There isn't a consensus to stop selecting the best into the better schools. And here, the delegation that's here, we have parliamentary representatives that are on both sides. So our hope is that they will learn and that they will begin to think, and I think they are, about what Finland offers, so that we can see how important an equitable distribution and no selection procedure, so that children can get distributed normally according to where they live or in other forms of random selection, let's say, for schools. So that factor is not yet agreed. And the other fact that isn't, that the three structural changes that the government wants to do: stop selection, stop charging fees in private subsidized schools. I think there's more agreement for that, that in general agreement that schools that are publicly funded, some of them should not be allowed to charge more parents, because that also produces differences. So there might be more agreement that. And then there's a third one that is a little less, more complicated to understand. Some of the private subsidized schools not only charge fees, but they also get profits that are not reinvested in the schools, that are more than what they should have. So they want to stop that. And there's a lot of discussion too. But as far as teachers, I think we will have a national agreement. I hope so. And I think we will. What everybody is saying, though, that it isn't enough, because we need to enter and improve teaching in the classrooms. Even if you pay teachers today more and reduce their class sizes and reduce the length of the day, the number of hours that they have to teach a week, they still can't miraculously change their way of teaching. We're going to have to help them in the classroom. So that we're waiting for. We're hoping that we will be able to develop a very good plan of support within classrooms and schools for teachers to improve their teaching.
When you talk about selection of certain students that go to private schools, I'm guessing they come from, like you said, higher socioeconomic levels. How much influence do those groups and classes have on policymakers that want to change things?
Yeah.
And is that a huge obstacle?
Obviously, they have. One of the interesting things is that we've had a whole parent movement, a very odd parent movement, it's appeared on the streets. They are parents of children that are in private subsidized schools, where they pay fees and where they have selection. It won't fall. Yeah. Oh, that's probably better. So those parents are saying, why? Why should we not? We want to have our children with better children. Why are you telling us that we're now going to have to be mixed? So there is a reaction reaction of parents who just want to move up a little bit in the social scale. They send their children to a little bit better school, and they want to have the right to do it and not be told that that they may have to mix with lower socioeconomic and sometimes more problematic students. So yes, there is resistance, some resistance in that field.
Thank you. I would like to ask you, how did you succeed to create such an active movement, really campaigning for the reform? I think that interests us a lot.
Well, that,
how did you succeed?
I think we were surprised. We got together, first of all, a small group. There is an organization in Chile called Choose Teaching, and they have committed themselves, they're a sort of NGO, committed themselves, non-government organization, to teachers. And they came to my office at the university and said to me, listen, there was two other institutions, and they said, listen, we need to do something. So they had an idea of calling the main institutions concerned with teachers and teaching, the university, academics, research centers, the teachers union, the student union, the university student union and the school student union, the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is very important in Chile. It has many schools. And the owners, the organization of owners of private subsidized schools. So those were 20 institutions, and we functioned. Those 20 institutions were asked to find a normal school teacher or another type of person, an academic or something like that, to form study groups. So we set out, the 20 institutions set out the big issues, but then these study groups got together for one whole day, 8 sessions in about 3 months, to propose changes, to discuss the issues and to propose changes. And then those study groups fed into the 20 bigger meeting, and we produced a document with suggestions. And we did those study groups also in not just in Santiago, the capital city, but in a city in the north and in a city in the south. And then we sent out through email, through the media, through the internet, a consultation, a national consultation. And we have now around 30,000 signatures of people supporting each one of the proposals that are in there. And so we feel that it's quite an innovation in our way of doing policy in Chile. And although we gave it to the minister and he said to us, oh, I think we're going to cut and paste a lot of things that you've said onto our policymaker, making documents. Well, we hope they will. In other words, I hope they will consider it and discuss with us. When I get back to Chile, there's two of us here that belong to that group. We're going to have some talks with the government to see how they're going to consider it. But I think it's a very interesting way of producing national awareness about these issues and also national commitment. And it's also thanks to internet that we can get all the signatures, you know, which has helped a lot. I think I probably have to go soon, but...
Do we have more questions?
There's a question over there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Please, I come from Ghana, and I think recent reports and studies have shown that we are improving in terms of access to education. Enrollment rate have increased in recent past. The problem we are facing now, I think, is similar to what you are facing in Chile, which is inequalities in quality of education. The achievement gap between the children is very wide, as you show on the board. And I think I would like to say that you are focusing on the right, you are on the right path in addressing these issues, especially looking at the effectiveness of teacher education, how teachers are prepared for teaching in schools. Because in Ghana, our focus and attention have been on how to provide resources and others, lacking critical analysis of teacher effectiveness. But with respect to teacher education, I would like to ask one question. You made mention of good subject knowledge of teachers, content knowledge. We were not long ago talking about what makes a good teacher. And we were talking about knowledge and also pedagogical content knowledge.
Yes.
And I don't know, because you mentioned in the Global Monitoring Report, it was mentioned, but in addressing this issue in Chile, I think you didn't mention it about how pedagogical content
knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah, because knowledge alone, content knowledge alone is not good.
No,
teachers
absolutely
have to get the skills, the competences to impact this knowledge to children in the right way. So I would like to know that, because in Ghana, for example, the entire period of teacher preparation, about 1/4 or 1/3, is only focused on equipping teachers with teaching methods. So there is too much emphasis on content knowledge than pedagogical content knowledge. So I would like to know how you are dealing with that issue.
Right, okay, yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mention it. I should have. It's very clear to us, and in this document that that this massive group has produced, we do say that it's content knowledge and pedagogic content knowledge. The content knowledge, if we are able to increase the quality of entry into university teacher education programs, a lot of the problems of content knowledge may be solved. They still have to learn some more, but they have to translate that knowledge into teaching knowledge, into knowledge for classroom teaching. And there we have an enormous problem because we have very little time allocated right now in the teacher education programs to supporting teaching both in developing pedagogic content knowledge, but also in the practicum, checking on it and having adequate supervision and adequate feedback to teacher practitioners that are in the classrooms trying to teach. And so it is a very big issue, and I'm glad you brought it out because I should have said it much much stronger. We need to move ahead in that too.
Thank you. I think we have exhausted all our questions now. Thank you very much. Muchas gracias. And what we would like to do is to invite you here again, hopefully, sometime in the future, to hear about the progress.
Yes,
what has changed in a year
I'd
or
love
two?
To come.
So I think that was a very informative presentation, and I think it relates very much and very nicely to our drawings and the theater we had this morning, which was really about quality. And we were looking at the teacher. What constitutes a good teacher? And so this figure here represents that.
That's good.
Thank you very much, and we hope to hear more about your progress.
I would be very glad to tell you, and I hope we progress also.
Thank you very much. And as you know, we were expecting a representative from the African Development Bank who's touring Europe after touring Africa, and we haven't got information whether she got the next flight to Jyväskylä. So what we will do now, I have requested two of my colleagues who have been good teachers abroad, Elina Oksanen, who has worked especially in the Balkans, but also elsewhere, and Margaret Tuomi, who recently was a visiting lecturer in Africa and has also worked in different other countries. And I have requested them also to respond to some of my questions concerning what constitutes a good teacher when you work not in your own country, but in another country. Because in my opinion, when you work in another country, you have to really think what is the core issues in your expertise. So may I invite some short sort of comments from you. If you would like to come to the front, that'd be great. And so I will have the questions, and you certainly do have the answers. So the first question I have for you is really about your work. When you go and work abroad in another culture, in another country, in another context, what do you think? You are good teachers here back home. What do you think you have to take into consideration when you work in another culture, in another context? What is it that you have to pay attention to?
Okay. Would you like to start?
I can start. This is working. Okay, since this was so an impromptu presentation, so I would like to change your question a little bit. When I was thinking about Africa, you want to lead this to Africa, I felt...
Or to Finland.
Or to Finland. So what I think that it would be better to do is if I look through all the different countries where I have done training, and I started listing in Tanzania and Lebanon Kosovo, Poland, Austria, Spain, and Finland. And what I thought would be valuable is to remember that no matter where you are on the educational map, we speak of different types of countries, every single place, Finland included, needs to start where they are and take one step forward. But I don't like these very general ideas of what needs to be done in Africa or in Europe. Wherever you are, we all need to improve our educational system because that's our future worldwide. It's the future of the human race. How we are teaching our children and how we are teaching our teachers to teach children. I thought I would mention some from each of these cultures and present the idea of where they are. In Tanzania, since I start with that one, I was really surprised when I was in Tanzania because I was at the process of writing an article about disabled women with disabilities in Tanzania, and in this case, the University of Dar es Salaam. And when I saw the physical environment, the infrastructure there, I couldn't help but say that the situation for women with disabilities, or university women with disabilities, that they would have to go into a ravine and up the other side. There were no elevators there. There was very little infrastructure for them to work with. There were many taboos in society about disabilities in general. They had a really hard fight against them to move forward, these women with disabilities. And I would like to remark to this man earlier today, who had the 8 children. In my opinion, the best thing you can do is to teach your daughters rather than your boys. Or if you have to choose the girls, because those girls will become mothers. And it is through the mother that you can raise up the next generation. Then I thought of Lebanon. In Lebanon, there are different styles and many different types of teaching in Lebanon, mostly all private. And the situation was that there were no programs there, very few programs there that address the issues of children with disabilities. So I know a lot about that because in Lebanon they tried my human dignity model and worked very well. And the parents especially wanted to bring this to the schools and to show the need for women, girls and boys with disabilities to have an education too, that they should come out of their homes and be trained. Kosovo. I wanted to speak something about Kosovo and that whole region there. What was really touching to me was the open wounds that are currently there and how to deal with these open wounds rather than speaking about discrimination. I don't want to speak about that. I don't think we are aware enough what's there in Kosovo and how you can't have diverse groups in the same classroom working together. There's challenges also in Northern Ireland. I was also there in Northern Ireland. But the wounds in Kosovo really are much beyond what we would even think about in Poland. Poland, they have tremendous political challenges there, especially being close to Ukraine. And so there's a lot of prejudice there that they need to deal with. Also in Spain, they have returning colonial groups who have great difficulties and pro- problems with education. So then I come to Finland. And we have really good infrastructure here in Finland. We have very equal educational system. But there's this society here in Finland, this very good infrastructure. But they've been up here in this cul-de-sac for so long that what Finland needs to do is to learn how to interact with different types of with people from diverse backgrounds. The teachers need to work on that, the children need to work on that, parents need to work on that, the employers need to work on that, and that's our challenge here. So I think it's really important that rather than think we have it okay and PISA is so terrific and all that stuff, I just wanted to mention that we also have a really hard job of opening up this idea of diversity and evaluating character in general, that just because a person is a foreigner, it doesn't mean that they're a certain way. That we really need to work on that a lot. And until we work on that and try to solve those problems, then we're going to continue to have difficulties in Finland. Okay, did I answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Margaret. I think you said almost all. But something I would like to add as more about my feelings when I was working there, Kosovo area. As you ask it, how we have to change or how we have to do something different. And I think I had to listen more about those people. So I think I know so quite well our system and how we are teaching our teaching methods and also our culture, our history, and so on. But I didn't know this culture and history of those other people. And all the time I had to ask, I had to learn their situation, but also this history. After that, I could understand better why those people are not so much planning or why they are not so much cooperating or why they don't know how to calculate or something like that. And so it's also this educational history to learn more about their behavior, their education, and so on. And all the time, I had to be very flexible. I said, maybe sometimes we didn't have electricity, and I had this PowerPoint presentation, you know, what to do. and it's something you have to be, to learn to be flexible, but also to learn to activate those people, as if they have learned to copy or they have learned to live in the culture that something is given there brought up. And have to change yourself that you are not the teacher who is giving those answers, but you have to be the teacher who is answering and activating and supporting, counseling those people to be more active and to create their own system. It's not copying something from the other country, but it's something to support, to create, to give some advice how to create your own system and to develop it.
Thank you very much. These are the experiences of two experienced teachers who have been working in other countries as well. And I hope this also reminds us what I think somebody you hear today mentioned, that teachers, the good teachers, are lifelong learners. And I think you do also both refer to that you actually, as a teacher, you have to learn and ask and motivate the students and the learners to ask. And you have to know the context, learn the context, and learn from your colleagues and also from your students.
And what is the advice you would like to give to our seminar participants? They want to be good teachers. And I mentioned already when we had the theater group here in the morning, we do expect all the teachers to be good performers. And as you know, we had a participatory theater, which meant that the theater group made us think and answer. So they had actually questions to us. So I think they were good teachers. What is your advice? The theater group advised us to be creative and ask questions. What is the advice you would like to give to this seminar participants?
Okay. I have to say that I have experience as a university teacher nearly 30 years. And still, I have to learn a lot. So we all are long life learners. But what I would like to say to you is something you have to learn yourself. Not only this qualification, this paper, but to know what you are really doing well, your strengths, and what you need to learn more. And I mean in concrete level, it's something that maybe you have to learn to discuss with your colleague if you are doing your work alone. So what are those strengths and what you have to develop all the time? I think it's enough.
Well, I would like to refer to the group over there that had the telescope and they had the technology. Where were you? And you were, the teacher was somehow looking afar. And, well, it's maybe cliche to speak of lifelong learning, but you need to be excited about the world out there and teaching the children to be good global citizens that want to have this ethical part that you mentioned, that was mentioned there, and to help them to have the tools to work not in the 2000 teens, but they need to have tools that they've got to use for the next 50 years. We'll be gone. But those kids, they need to have the tools they need to work through the world 50 years from now. I don't know if that made any sense, but we're not teaching our children to live now. We're teaching our children to learn in the future. And this also counts for teacher training, because it's impossible now in our teacher training institutes to give them a corpus of knowledge and expect to have that last through their whole life career. It's impossible. So you need to have teachers who have good coping mechanisms, who are able to think on their feet, who are able to adapt to new ideas, and able to learn how to deal with situations that will happen long after we are gone, we teachers are gone, but these teachers who are studying to be teachers, they will be in their career for the next 50 years, at least. So it's a great challenge for our teacher training colleges, not only to give them good practices and experiences for today, but to give those tools which they'll need to use 50 years from now. That's what I think we need to do.
Thank you very much for your advice. So we will follow your advice, and we will do it right after the lunch break. Then we'll come back here at 1 o'clock, and we'll continue our discussions at 1. And do remember that all these themes that we discuss and take part in today are for us. They are really for us. So the seminar, like we heard from the theater group as well, is for us to think, and we are to create the campaigns needed anywhere in the world and globally. So I will see you back here at 1 o'clock. So we'll have 1 hour break now, and 1 o'clock we'll continue with the panel discussions where we have invited some of our colleagues from Helsinki, Åbo Akademi, and Jyväskylä researchers, and also from the Ministry of Education and Culture. So let's be back here at 1 o'clock. Thank you.